And welcome to the Theater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And today we're going to talk to Rick Sterling, and he has an article in mintpress.com, I think it is. And it is concerning the what I'm going to call the peace candidate, Tulsi Gabbard, and why she is getting support and why she should get more support. We're going to go into that with Rick. He attended a talk of hers in San Francisco just a few days ago. And in the latter half of the show, Phil Conant, who's here. How you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon.
We're going to be talking a little bit about the front page of the Globe and Mail and whether or not they're trying to stir up mischief with China, or how much more do they wish to do that. They do it much too often. They do it with bias and an intention to see if they can poison relations and also bring sanctions. That seems to be the goal. And, of course, to paint us as virtuous, always. We're virtuous and advanced. And the way we know that is we used to be a great colonial power. That is, we and Her Highness, and then, of course, now our president, Mr. Trump. So it's very important to us to lecture all the other countries of the world about how they need to shape up. That's how I understand the game plan. And we'll probably have some things to say about this new business with Mexico. Trump is looking for trouble with Mexico, so we'll get into that. But I believe we're joined now by Rick Sterling himself. Are you there, Rick?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Hey, Rick, thank you very much for joining us. People should know you're an outstanding investigative journalist and a member of the Syria Solidarity Movement. And you've written a lot of great articles over the years tracking this great power. The United States has an exceptional state that interferes in the internal affairs of other countries, whether they like it or not. So with that background, you seem to be drawn to or taking an interest in the campaign of the only person that I know of running for the presidency of the United States for the Democratic Party, who is what seems to be an unalloyed peace candidate. Do I have that right? What do you think of her?
Well, I think you have that right. I mean, the election, you know, the marathon process that they have here, you know, is just starting now. The election is not for whatever it is, a year and a half away. But Tulsi Gabbard really does strike me as being quite unique. You mentioned that I'm a member of the Syria Solidarity Movement. That's one of several organizations I work with. I also work around Latin America and as well as the Mount Diablo Peace and Justice Center. But Tulsi, first, I became aware of her a couple of years ago when she went to Syria with Denis Kucinich and looked at the situation, you know, for herself. Mm-hmm. And she came back and she authored a resolution in the U.S. Congress. She's a three-term congressperson from Hawaii. She authored a resolution to stop arming terrorists. Mm-hmm. And that would be terrorists in Iraq and in Syria. And she made no bones about it. She said U.S. is funding what it amounts to al-Qaeda in Syria. And from my own work and my own trips to Syria, I know that to be true. Mm-hmm. So I was very impressed by her courage and her clarity. Mm-hmm. And so she came on my radar at that time. And then just a couple of weeks ago, she visited the San Francisco Bay Area as part of her campaign, which is just starting off to be the Democratic Party nominee for the 2020 election. So I went over to San Francisco to hear her talk. It was a packed house. It was standing room only hall.
Wow.
A lot of enthusiasm. And I would say she is really exceptionally clear, concise, very powerful, and she comes across as being very sincere as well. Mm-hmm. So I am impressed with her. I've just started working on an article that's going to explore different aspects of her campaign and her positions. But, you know, right at this point in time, she's looking very positive to me for a variety of reasons, which I guess we'll get into in this interview, Phil. Mm.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that Danny Heifong, a Black Agenda Report, also he wrote an assessment, and his point was that we need this issue to be heard by the American people in a debate. You know, where there's national attention, they're all there. Win, lose, or draw, if she could pose the issue of regime change, the trillions of dollars costing millions of lives, et cetera, and make the other guys squirm, I would be very happy person.
No, I think that's the minimum objective, to get her in the debates, because they try to throw her off. She's been attacked from various angles. She's very adept. She's a very good politician, remarkably young. She's only, I think she's turning 38 in a month or so. But she's got 15 years military experience. She was two deployments to Iraq as a member of the U.S. Army National Guard. She was on a medical team in Iraq, her first tour of duty. And so she's got a lot of empathy for Americans who volunteer for the military. She understands the plight there, and I think that gives a lot of strength to her position, being against regime change worse, because she's seen it firsthand, whereas these other politicians have not. Of course, in Washington, in Congress, there's very, very few senators or Congress people who have firsthand experience with the military. So, you know, they're out saluting the troops and so forth, but, you know, whose interests are they really acting in? I think Tulsi is probably going to garner substantial support from military the ground troops, the people who have seen it for themselves.
Yeah, and by the way, this is a group that's been highly misrepresented. A lot of people wrap themselves in flags and speak in the name, but many, many veterans are very unhappy with the situation, both of their own treatment, but the ugly wars they've seen.
Right.
And they're not getting any voice. It would be be something if they had her there, who, with all of her credentials.
Right. And the other thing, another thing that was impressive hearing her talk is she says she talked about important domestic issues, health care for all. A dramatic change in the so-called criminal justice system, which in this country is criminal itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know that there's over 2 million Americans in prison here, and many, many millions more who are on probation or whatever.
The bizarre phenomenon, which I still can't get my brain around, the privatization.
Yes.
Where corporations or companies run it for profit. You know, you say, is that likely to lead to more people being incarcerated?
Oh, yeah, it's guaranteed.
Somebody can get paid.
That. Yeah. But so Tulsi addresses some important domestic issues like that, but she leads it right into, she says, central to it all is our foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the U.S. public is paying for these wars. The profiteers, they're making money hand over fist because they've got their investments in military contractors, military corporations, whether it's Boeing or Lockheed Martin or General Dynamics or whatever. They're making money hand over fist, where it's the people paying the price. Mm-hmm. So she makes that point very strongly with a lot of sincerity. Mm-hmm. She's taken a lot of heat. And you kind of sense, I spoke to her personally at the end of the event just for a few moments, but I guess I was kind of moved. She comes across as being extremely charming. She's very, you know, very attractive physically. But chatting with her for a few moments, I was mostly struck by she comes across as pretty strong, pretty tough.
Uh-huh.
She's not going to be pushed around. And she says it. She said it in her talk, actually. She said somebody asked her, what about Bernie Sanders? Because, of course, she left the DNC leadership. She was co-chair of the DNC, I believe, in 2016 during the nomination process. I don't know whether she left or she was kicked out because she was complaining and saying they should be having more debates between Bernie Sanders and Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard both accounts, but whether she resigned or was pushed out, She then went on to say, well, I'm not part of the formal leadership now, so I can take a stance, and my stance is in support of Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
So at the meeting in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, somebody asked her, and she said, I'm very good friends with Bernie Sanders. And then she just went on and she said that the thing that she has that separates her from the other people running for candidacy, including Sanders, is she has the direct firsthand experience.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I'm not going to be intimidated by the generals who come into the office, by the military industrial complex.
Yes.
I don't care how many stars they've got on their shoulders. I'm not going to be intimidated because I've seen firsthand the effects of those regime change wars. They've been bad for the people that were invaded, and they've been bad for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, but she does it in a very charming, charming way. So she's got a lot of political skills.
Well, she's beginning to get some attention. And, of course, there's the famous run-in with the daughter of John McCain, which I think probably won her a lot of support because McCain's daughter used every emotional device she could think of to try to look to him, give Tulsi a hard time, but it actually was to the detriment of, I think they say the Twitterverse found it all very bad. As you know, the Twitterverse, whatever that is, apparently more democratic than the democracy.
I've got a few more direct connections. My son told me he was impressed with her performance. So,
well, that's the best. If you can't trust, if you can't count on your son for insight. This is Rick Sterling, by the way, and the article is in Mint Press News. I'm glad that, of course, Bernie has to come up as the, you say Tulsi Gabbard, we have people say, well, what about Bernie? And it strikes me she's also more specific. She says, I would end that war on Syria, the invade, and I would end this regime change stuff. But she calls him out as those things were wrong, criminal, hurt America, hurt the people that they attacked.
Right.
Whereas Bernie tends to go, he says, I've heard him say, "No, we're going to end these doggone, regime change wars or endless wars." Pardon me, endless war. But that's a generalization.
Yes,
she's very specific.
Right. It's true. There's really a distinction. Number one, Gabbard puts foreign policy right in the center. She says this is really crucial to the United States policy, and the president, above all, is the commander-in-chief. It's foreign policy that is the most important element in the president's duties. Mm-hmm. And where she puts it front and foremost, Sanders avoids it for the most part. When he's pressed, in 2016, I went to hear him speak here in the Bay Area as well, and that was also impressive. But he said very little. The little bit he did say sounded like, a positive change for the better, but it's nothing. It's an order of magnitude different, both in terms of priority and the strength of conviction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason why I think it's crucial that Tulsi Gabbard get supported and her voice be heard.
Yeah, and by the way, we are raising this at a time when she herself does need the support. A lot of us want to see that debate. And we think she could carry the banner on ending the war with talent and know-how. Yeah. So people actually could go to Tulsi Gabbard. She has a Twitter account. Everybody does except me. But anyhow,
Phil, what's happening? I'll set one up for you, Phil.
Yeah. Okay, that's a dare. I mean, I'm phobic, so you have to calm me down. But anyhow, But she, people can contribute, and that's all it needs is she, more, our American listeners in particular, get behind her. You can send her a dollar, and that adds to her list. She needs 65,000 names.
To get on the debates, I hope they don't change the rules later on, which we have to be concerned about.
Yes.
But at this point, the rules are that each candidate needs 65,000 unique donations from different individuals. And I don't know if you've got American listeners, then absolutely for sure, please go to Tulsi2020.com and make a donation. Small or large, they all count.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that Canadians can chip in.
And
in a certain way, everybody in the world ought to be able to vote in the U.S. election, since U.S. policy affects everybody.
And Trump is our president. We just mentioned that on air here. We don't know what our policy is on Venezuela till we get the call.
So, that's sad. I know. That's really sad. Well, you see, there's another example.
Taxation without representation, I think they call it.
Exactly. Yeah. Where there's it's not perfect, but it's a good resolution in Congress, or a good statement coming from just 15 Congress people, including Tulsi, signed a statement criticizing the Trump administration for the economic war that they're waging against Venezuela, and criticizing the administration for their threats.
Mm-hmm.
So now, why can't they get more than why isn't it 150 or 350? But they've got 15. Tulsi is one of those, of course.
Mm-hmm. Further on her positions, she told a story there. She is pointing out that we have a very belligerent president and all of the guys around him, Bolton and Pompadour, whatever his name is, and they all are very belligerent. I mean, she says,
yes.
Let's remember something. The people you're talking about and to, they are also nuclear armed. And then she told, I guess she was in Hawaii when they had a false alarm on a nuclear attack.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And that's another, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because in some way there's nothing more important. The breakdown in relations with Russia, the threats, the possibility of an accidental or intentional nuclear war. And yes, she recounted what happened in Hawaii, where they had, for 5 minutes, it was being broadcast all over Hawaii, texting to hundreds of thousands of people saying nuclear armed missiles coming toward Hawaii. This is not a warning. And creating a panic situation. And so she recounted what happened there, where they even had one father was putting his little girl into dropping her down into a sewer, lifting up the manhole and dropping her down below ground, thinking that might provide her some protection. It was just crazy. But so she's on that, and here's another example where she is a standout. She has
Absolutely.
She initiated a resolution last month in February, as Trump was withdrawing from the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty that goes back to Reagan and Gorbachev. She introduced a resolution in Congress calling for the U.S. to continue to not create any armaments or missiles or weapons that would violate that treaty.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, prohibiting funding of missiles or weapons that would be in violation of that treaty. So trying to preserve the essence of the treaty. So that's Tulsi Gabbard initiated that.
Yeah. Now, by the way, that story, again, she's reminding us, in the way that they don't want to hear these stories. I'd forgotten about it until I was reading your account of her speech. And, of course, the other thing that underlined was, you don't. If you believe these guys are not incompetent, you're really in a dream world, because that showed how unorganized and messed up the whole system is. You recall the governor couldn't find the phone number of the guy who was issuing the nuclear warning?
Right.
I mean, it was just a clown show, except it could have been real.
It could have been real. You've got who knows how many people have access to potentially launching nuclear missiles. They're on submarines.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly a scary time, and we've kind of forgotten about it.
Mm-hmm.
There was the end of the Cold War, and there was supposed to be a peace dividend. Well, that didn't last long.
Right.
And
NATO was
going to
go away.
Now we are where things are getting worse and worse, mm-hmm. and we have some kind of crazed Democrats who think it's very liberal or progressive to be fomenting hatred of Russia.
Yes.
That's just delusional. They just absolutely don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I say that having visited Russia a couple of times, it was mm-hmm. very surprising and informative to me to go there and see the situation, traveling around, going to Crimea. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they talk about Russia occupying and taking over Crimea, that is just so much baloney. Crimea was part of Russia going back to the 18th century, 1750, yeah. 1783, actually, ironically, the year that the U.S. was officially granted independence by Great Britain.
By the way, America has forgotten they supported Russia in the yes. battle for the Crimea.
Yeah. So it's just crazy.
One of those details, get that one under the rug. By the way, I like your point about people should be using the Internet. They should also do what you did, which is travel. And and we all know that the solution from the point of view of Mr. Pompeo is to stop you from traveling.
Evidently.
The last thing they want is people going and looking for themselves.
Keep people in ignorance and fuel the xenophobia in the U.S. and the U.S. sense of supremacy. Yeah. That's really extremely dangerous to me, that sense of entitlement that the U.S. runs the world, that it's the global leader, and any other country is an adversary. It's truly dangerous now, and we've got the worst of all worlds in that we've got the old school neocons who were part of funding the terrorists in Nicaragua and then fueling and helping to break down the United Nations.
Yes.
John Bolton, I learned this recently. John Bolton, who's the so-called National Security Advisor of the U.S., he ought to be the International Insecurity Advisor is what he actually is, but he was personally he was the hitman who took out the original director general of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. Yeah. Ever since then, they basically worked. They lost their independence at that time, 2002.
That was a grisly story. I'm glad you called attention. People can do search on that. I don't know if you wrote about it, but I know that he was completely vulgar. It was all blackmail. You do this or we'll break your neck.
Exactly. It was like a mafia thug.
It wasn't Adlai Stevenson.
That was the Brazilian leader of the OPCW, and this is crucially important now.
The man tells the story himself. He said that. Yeah. He's the one quoting.
That's the tool they're going to use to justify escalating the attack in Syria in future. Mm-hmm. So we're in a dangerous time, and Tulsi Gabbard, a breath of fresh air. That's
absolutely
my whole point. And I don't agree, does she say everything and do everything that I'd like? That's not really realistic. But she is hitting a lot of really key points in a very, very articulate way. She comes across as very sincere, very dynamic. I'm really optimistic about her.
Yeah, I'm glad we're asking you about this. If I could, a couple other things where she stands out. I notice, again, and we mentioned Bernie, and inevitably, by the way, for people who care about these issues, it's going to be Bernie and her as the main topics. But he has bought into, regrettably, a lot of the Russiagate stuff. And I notice that she has not. And what her point is that this has been a distraction. I don't know if she blames it on Hillary, but frankly, the Democratic Party, the old gang, the Obamas and the Clintons, are trying to explain their losing by saying that Putin did it. And that's just a waste of time. We all watched it unfold, and we said she's running a campaign that is going to lose and deserves to lose. But Tulsi makes a distinction. She does not buy into this stuff. And she also, like you said earlier, it's important to have diplomatic and positive relations with as many countries as possible, with a view, as you should internationally, of cooperating, not bullying. And Bernie actually hasn't checked that box as clearly.
No, he hasn't. He waffles a lot. I don't know whether he's just poorly informed on international relations. You'd think he's certainly old enough, and at one time he did travel a fair bit You'd think he'd be old and wise enough to see through the baloney and the propaganda, but for whatever reason, he does not. He shows no courage in this area at all.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Tulsi Gabbard, I'll just read. I'm looking at the transcript of her talk, the talk she gave in San Francisco, and this is her. She's not reading the text of a speech. She's just speaking off the cuff, and she's hitting these points. And I watched some of the speech she gave the next day in another part of the Bay Area, and it was different. So she doesn't have like a totally a stump speech, although she, of course, hits key issues.
Uh-huh.
But here's what she said. She said, "We must change our foreign policy, the way we're relating to different countries, and build those relationships based on cooperation, not conflict, and work towards a future where we're getting rid of nuclear weapons rather than building more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to take the trillions of dollars being wasted on regime change wars and a nuclear arms race and put them to good use at home."
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of the core of her policy, and she's completely upfront, and she makes it specific, too. So she's good on Yemen, she's good on Syria, she's good and clear on Venezuela.
That's right. I'm glad you raised that. Go ahead.
Right. When I first looked into her, when I first became aware of her and she came back and was so courageous and clear on Syria, which is so exceptional here in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
I looked up and I was kind of really disappointed to see her position on Israel-Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And I have since learned that she's actually learned a lot. So she's really moving in the right direction. And I looked up and I saw the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, they did a rating on politicians, and in 2013-14, they rated her 0%. She was on the wrong side. And in the last Congress, they rated her 100%.
Yeah. Oh, that is remarkable.
So she's really learned about the reality as versus the propaganda on what on the situation in Israel Palestine, and she's moving in a good direction there as well.
Yeah, and about her identity, which people discuss, and it should be brought up that she is a Samoan, American Samoan, population 55,000, and she is Hindu, Her name, Tulsi, is, I understand, a Sanskrit name her mother gave her. Strangely enough, her mother is from Decatur, Indiana.
Right.
And she is the Hindu in the family, and the father is Roman Catholic. I love these stories. But,
right.
And I was impressed with it. I thought, now, would this be cool to have a Samoan Hindu as woman president? I mean, I hate to sound like a Berkeleyite, but that's cool. I mean, that would be very cool.
Well, look who we've got as president of the U.S. now.
Yeah. Yes.
A casino real estate mogul.
In terms of karma, the opposite, I guess. Just,
right.
A Manichaean figure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think Tulsi's got quite a bit more karma than the current president.
Yeah, but she has to. That's in American politics, all these things are considered a burden. She is actually a racial minority, and she is also obviously a minority religion.
Right.
I like her account. I think it was in her speech. She said that her view of as a practicing Hindu, about which I know nothing, but she says that her life, she thinks, is in her view of the school of Hinduism she belongs to, your work, what you do every day in your work should be just and right and well done, and that's a form of prayer.
Yeah. Right.
Sold me.
She said, I'm looking it up here, actually. It was in the Q&A following her talk. Somebody asked her about her faith, and she said, regarding the last question, I'm a practicing Hindu. I practice Bhakti Yoga and Karma Yoga. I dedicate my life to do my best every day, to be of service to God, and to be of service to others. That pretty much sums up my spiritual foundation and my motivation throughout my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think, I mean, looking at her her track record because of her harsh criticisms of terrorism, which has been prominently funded by Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wahhabist, you know, really it's that's not Islam. That's a mm-hmm. kind of a perversion of Islam, that extremist mm-hmm. Sectarian ideology. Mm-hmm. She's been attacked by Tulsi has been attacked by sectarian religious people,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen her in researching her position on things. I think she is very genuinely believes all religions need to be respected, and all religions need to respect that they're part of the mm-hmm. the global mix. And have respect for other faiths as well. So mm-hmm. I do have the sense that she's against any sectarianism, whether it's national or religious.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly watching her, I get that impression. She is very careful with her own temperament, and she listens to a lot of harsh words, which is very hard to do. She doesn't flinch, which shows, she has respect sort of for whoever's talking, even though she's thinking, this guy's trying to cut my throat. But she says, I still, I hope his little soul will get well. So,
yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's handles very well, whether she's being interrogated by Wolf Blitzer, who was the former staffer for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Mm-hmm. That's long ago, but it just shows where he's coming from ideologically.
Mm-hmm.
He basically tried to give her the third degree, mm-hmm. and she didn't back down. She took his questions, she smiled, and she answered them well without being defensive.
Yeah, she's gotten, by the way, we can point that out. The mainstream gang has really roughed her up when they get a chance, like McCain did it on that television show, and Stephen Colbert gave her a hard time, but she showed his colors. He's always been a lover of the Pentagon.
Right.
If he sees a man in uniform, he starts to just get down on his hands and knees. It's pathetic. And so he says, basically, same with the guy, Bill Maher. They say, we're the policemen of the world. That's our job.
Mm.
And she says, no, we're not. So it's a good – that's where the line is drawn.
Right.
Rick, it's great. Let's say one more thing. How can people contribute to her? Where they can go to her?
Phil – I hope as many listeners as possible go to Tulsi2020.com and look at you can watch some speeches there. You can search on, just do a search, and you can find these interviews and so forth that we've been talking about. But listeners can go to Tulsi2020.com and make a donation. Help get her on the platform. We need more people to hear Tulsi Gabbard.
Absolutely. Rick Sterling, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You're doing great work, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, thanks, Phil. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Rick Sterling, and I found the article, Met Press News, and it's Tulsi Gabbard versus U.S. exceptionalism, and it was published March 20. That was following a speech of hers in San Francisco. She's getting some press. She should get more. I think we have a little Hawaiian music, and then we will come back with more.